This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kings carry it up ice. Toffoli on a break. He slows up, waits for Kempe. Toffoli shoots, scores! Rangers hit the iron on one end, and the Kings win it on the other.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. That was Tyler Toffoli of the Los Angeles Kings scoring that big overtime goal. Is he going to be traded? He's one of the names on TSN trade bait board. We're going to talk about that as we do the Illegal Curve trade deadline match game. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality homemade food since 1985. For their full menu, visit bernsteinsdeli.com. Dave, Legal Curve trade deadline match game. We're going to go over some players. We talked about it last segment. We're not sure if the Jets are going to be that active heading into the trade deadline. Certainly not going to be as active as they were last year. Were there seven moves that Chevy made last year prior to the trade deadline? Bogdan Kisilevich.
Oh, yeah.
Can't forget about him.
Well, you actually can forget about him because I did.
One of the things I think that stands out this year that maybe hasn't been the case in the last couple of years is that there aren't any big names. I mentioned that last segment, but you know, when you're talking about Kevin Hayes and you're talking about Mark Stone, and obviously Mark Stone made his triumphant return to Ottawa. We're going to talk about that with Haley Salvian coming up in about 20 minutes. We're also going to talk about the 3-on-3 women's game at the upcoming 2020 All-Star Game in St. Louis, but we're going to talk about Mark Stone's return to Ottawa. The surprising Senators, even though they're not going to the playoffs, they've been very feisty this year and I think have garnered a lot of respect across the NHL. But I think, Dave, that's what stands out to me, and we're going to go through some of these names here coming up, but there isn't a Mark Stone.
Right.
Like, there isn't a Kevin Hayes. I mean, Chris Kreider is probably the biggest name that's out there, and we might see a bigger name moved, but to our knowledge right now, there isn't a Paul Stastny that's going to be available. And I don't think that really applies to the Jets anyways. I don't think we're expecting the Jets to go out and acquire a second-line center. And quite simply, that's because Blake Wheeler is their second-line center right now. And we're expecting when Brian Little returns that there's a good chance that Wheeler stays as the second-line center and that Brian Little is either your third-line center or, you know, goes on the wing, Lowry.
Wouldn't that be some nice center depth finally for the Jets to have Scheifele, Wheeler, Little, and Lowry? Now that would be some depth up the middle.
It would be similar to like it was 2 years ago when you had Brian Little and Adam Lowry as your third and fourth line centers, and you had Mark Scheifele and Paul Stastny as your top two centers, and you went to the Western Conference Final and almost got to the Stanley Cup Final. So absolutely, I think, you know, reinforcements are hopefully coming for the Jets very soon. We don't know exactly, Dave, when Brian Little is coming back. I mean, I think the Jets are optimistic. It's going to be shortly after the All-Star break, and it's
I don't know about that.
Well, relatively speaking, shortly. I'm not saying, you know, the day after.
Right.
I'm saying a couple weeks, maybe, after the All-Star break. I think they're optimistic. Again, I should be clear. I don't want to give fans false hope, but I think nobody should expect Brian Little to certainly be on this road trip. He's not going to be on the road trip, but he might not even be in the first 3, 4, 5 games after the All-Star break. But there are positive signs that Brian Little might be able to come back this year. I think you'll give me that, Dave, that it looked like maybe Brian Little was done for the year after he took that puck to the face against the New Jersey Devils back in November. It's been a real tough year for Little.
So concussion.
We just hope that he's able to come back into the lineup and give the Jets that added depth. So let's get to the trade deadline match game. I think Shawnee Osorio's got some music queued up. We're going to go over, I've got a list here of 10 players.
Okay,
Dave?
Yep.
And I want you to tell me whether you think one of these, there we go. Some nice music there.
Good bet.
I like it.
Like it?
Makes me happy, that music. We're going to go over 10 players here, David Minuk.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me whether or not you think they could be a match for the Jets. And again, we'll reiterate, I mean, there's a good chance that none of these players are going to be acquired by the Winnipeg Jets, but we're just having a good time. 5 weeks to go before the NHL trade deadline.
And you always hope that's a good day anyways, right? You don't want that to be a boring day. Yeah. So
here we go. First player, having a career year this year. I don't know exactly how many goals he has now. I think he has 21 or something, right? Ooh. He has 22?
No, who? You didn't say name yet.
Jean-Gabriel Pajot.
19.
Well, you've got the show plan.
I know, but you didn't. I know who it is, but the fans don't know who it is.
He's got 19 goals. Pajot is easily going to score 20 goals. He's on pace for a career year if he's already not at a career year. JG Pajot, do you think that he would be a match for the Winnipeg Jets?
Oh, I mean, we're talking about center depth, obviously, and he'd be the third highest scoring player right now on the Winnipeg Jets from a goals perspective. So, I mean, yeah, but again, you know, we look at this Jets team and with the potential of having Little back, I don't know that Pajot is necessarily a fit.
I agree with you. I really like Pajot as a player.
Yeah.
But with Brian Little coming back, I think he could add some scoring to that third line, but I don't think it's a match. Number two, Chris Kreider of the New York Rangers. Obviously, Carey Price is not a huge fan of him. Really good winger. You know, he's a guy that there's going to be interest. You hear the Boston Bruins, the Colorado Avalanche, a lot of teams could be interested in Chris Kreider. Dave, Chris Kreider, what do you think?
Well, I mean, again, the Jets and the Rangers have shown some history now with making some trades a couple of times already in the last little bit. So there is some connectivity there. But in terms of need, you need a winger. I mean, obviously, you're always love to have the depth. But, like, what's it going to cost you? And, again, we know that the Jets really are pointing towards that defensive need as opposed to a forward need. So I'm going to go on a no on, not a match.
Yeah, not a match for me with the Jets. He is going to be traded prior to the trade deadline. I think he's going to go to a contender, possibly in the Western Conference. I think he makes a lot of sense on the Colorado Avalanche, but there's a lot of teams that are going to be calling. Number three, Tyler Toffoli, Los Angeles Kings. Obviously, you know, a guy that could probably play on your second or third line. Do you think that could maybe be a match for the Jets?
Wait, why the music? Oh, there we go. Oh, I was nervous. I'm like, I can't answer this question without the accompanying music. You know what? I like Toffoli. I just like saying Toffoli, and I think he's a pretty fun little player. He obviously was pretty important for the Kings in you know, one of the 2013-14 playoff runs. So he's got some Stanley Cup playoff experience. It's obviously something that a lot of the guys on the Jets don't have. So I mean, you know, adding a veteran in that regard probably isn't such a bad thing. But you know, if it's not costing you a lot, then sure. But I don't know if the Kings are giving him up for a cheap offer.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Toffoli would be a nice possible fit on the Jets.
Right.
But I don't think that's their number one target right now. Right. So I'm going to say no match for Toffoli. Another guy that I think is going to attract a lot of interest on the trade market. Number four, you know, we've got a couple of minutes here, Dave, so we'll try to get through as many as we can. Alec Martinez, left shot defenseman. Mm-hmm. I believe he's only got 1 year left on his contract. You know, his name is out there. Some people think that the LA Kings are going to keep him, but Alec Martinez, left shot defenseman, maybe can play on your second pair or third pair.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely a player. We had someone tweet at us saying that he was the number one guy on their trade bait board that they wanted to see the Jets acquire. I mean, he's obviously a pretty decent defenseman, you know, as the depth, two Stanley Cups with the Kings. So you've got a guy, again, I keep going back to experience. Because that, if you heard me in the last segment, all those players I listed, Morrissey, Pionk, Samberg, Nyku, the list goes on and on. What are they missing? They're missing experience. So I think that's one thing that the Jets team could use is a veteran defenseman.
So match or no match?
Match.
We got to hurry up a little bit all here because we're only on number four.
I don't want to just say match. I got to give a little.
Alec Martinez, of course, the hero more than a couple of years back for the LA Kings.
What'd you say?
In the playoffs. I said match.
Okay, good.
Okay, next one. Marco Scandella. He was just traded by the Buffalo Sabres. Well, not just traded, but about a month ago from the Buffalo Sabres to the Montreal Canadiens. Another left shot defenseman. Marco Scandella match. You probably wouldn't have to give up that much to acquire him.
No, I mean, obviously the trade between Buffalo and Montreal was just consummated. You're looking at it and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I mean, you could see that. And again, that's more of a depth move for the Jets. So if it's not costing you a lot, I don't look.
And he's in the last year of his contract.
Right. So I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing to kind of augment. But again, we know the Jets, to move the needle, really folks want to see someone in the top four.
Okay, we only have a minute here, Dave. Let's get through more. We're on number six here. Another guy who's been out there, rumored to be on the trade market, Brendan Dillon, San Jose Sharks.
Well, I like his game. I think he's a pretty good... the music's back. All right. So I'm going to say match. I like him. But, I mean, again, the qualifier always is going to be, what is the cost? But for the sake of the segment, I'm going to say match.
Yeah, I'll go match with Brendan Dillon. Sammy Vatanen, New Jersey Devils. The Devils are not making the playoffs this year. So Kyle Palmieri's name is out there. I thought about putting him on this list, but didn't think he was a match at all, so I didn't put him on here. But Sammy Vatanen, another defenseman, talking about top four defensemen.
Well,
I mean, he's a guy that could play in your top four.
Right, and to me, when can you go wrong when you're adding another Finn? why not? I mean, this would be the this would officially become Finnipeg if you added another Finn at this point. So, no, I think, again, you're looking at a guy who's, you know, was a has been a consistent player, whether it was for the Ducks, now obviously he's with the Devils. And he produces 22 points in 43 games. I think he's a pretty solid player. I think you'd be happy to have him on your team.
And like Scandella, Vatanen is in the last year of his contract. Right. So we were talking about it earlier. You were just mentioning it, Dave, with guys like Dylan Sandberg and Ville Heinola possibly playing for your team next year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that is a rental, essentially.
That's
right? Okay, we've got three more guys left. Alex Galchenyuk, I thought, was an interesting one. We hear out of Pittsburgh, you know, he's been playing on the third line, the fourth line for the Penguins, not having a good year. He's a guy that apparently Jim Rutherford might move. I mean, what do you think of Alex Galchenyuk? To me, like, he could look very interesting on that third line for the Jets, although it would change, you know, the dynamic of that third line. To me, he could really add some scoring punch in those bottom two lines.
Well, look at his scoring seasons, 20, 30, 17, 19, 19. I mean, that's what a third line center would look very good doing, right? And Adam Lowry's not producing in that regard, anywhere near that number. Now, he only has 5 goals this season. So maybe he's a little closer to Lowry. So I think he could be a match. But again, it's a question of Palmeries loves Lowry in that third line role. So I don't know if they're going to do it.
Okay, we really only have a few seconds here. Two more guys, 9 and 10. Erik Gustafsson, you hear that because he's in the last year of his contract. We just asked Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune about him. And Jimmy seems to think that, you know, Gustafsson might be a guy that the Hawks keep. But Erik Gustafsson and Josh Hosang was an interesting one because he's back in the American Hockey League playing for Bridgeport, but you hear that the Islanders would still be interested in moving Josh Hosang. So Gustafsson, Hosang, match or no match for those guys?
Well, I mean, again, Gustafsson's a defenseman, so I think from a need perspective, the Jets are more likely to go for that. But I mean, whether the Jets and Hawks are going to do it, I don't know. And I got to go quick. I think Hosang is an interesting reclamation project.
And that concludes the Illegal Curve trade deadline match game. It's going to be funny because none of these guys are coming to the Winnipeg Jets. So this segment was completely useless. But, you know, it's fun with 5 weeks to go. We're going to be continuing to talk about the NHL trade deadline. It's the end of January, going into early February. It's that time of year where you got to talk about the trade deadline. And as we approach, you know, the day when it's going to be James Duthie and the Insiders and all the boys, Marty Biron, Jeff O'Neill, all those guys are going to be ready for the trade deadline and those hours of coverage. And obviously here on TSN Radio 1290, we're going to be all over that trade deadline. We're going to head to break. When we come back, Dave, we're going to talk about the head coach carousel and who we think might be the next head coach to be fired in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
John Hines is a great leader. He has a great track record of both effectively developing younger players and successfully motivating veteran players. He's certainly young in comparison to me. And a very, as a young, I feel, up-and-coming and very bright coach, and we're confident that he is the guy to cultivate a winning culture in our locker room.
That's Nashville Predators general manager David Poile at the John Hines press conference announcing John Hines as the new coach of the Predators, replacing longtime head coach Peter Laviolette. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. He will be back next weekend. And, you know, this has been a pretty crazy year when it comes to coaches, Dave. Now up to 7 coaches that have been fired. And we wanted to read a few more tweets from our IC question of the day. Of course, that question was, should the Jets be in the market for a top 4 defenseman? Ken saying, only if it's worth with a multi-year contract left. Rick Pangman saying Travis Hamonic, please. DSP 2422, absolutely. Swiss Canucks saying top 4 in 2021. Morrissey, Pionk, Buff / replacement, Niku, Heinola. 5-6-7 could be Tucker Poolman, Sandberg, and Niku. Unless Buff is coming back, a top 4 is needed, or we suffer through Sandberg, Niku, Heinola prove themselves. Still, the D is overall not heavy enough without Buff. Our good friend Dallas Paul is saying yes, they should. So when you're talking about, you know, the Jets and what they may or may not do before the trade deadline, there's certainly, Dave, a difference in opinion. Mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to Jets fans right now on Twitter. And I think there's probably a lot of discussion happening amongst management, maybe not as much discussion as there will be, you know, coming up in 2 or 3 weeks closer to the trade deadline. But, you know, you watch the way that that pair of Anthony Beteto and Lucas Ibiza played yesterday. Oh. And you don't have a lot of reinforcements coming, right? Like Cam Schilling is up with the Jets, but that's short term. I mean, like Tucker Pullman is going to be back very soon. We don't know if it's going to be tomorrow, but I think, Dave, you would agree that we expect Tucker Pullman to be back on the road trip.
Yeah, that's what Palmieri said last week.
Right.
The expectation is he'll be back.
So I think there's, you know, if he isn't,
or he could be back, I should say.
Right. So it could be against Chicago tomorrow night, but, or it could be against Carolina.
It'd be more kind of the way he said it.
Later in the road trip.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So Tucker Pullman's coming back. Cam Schilling might stay up with the Jets, but when you're talking about Nathan Beaulieu and you're talking about Carl Dahlstrom, I mean, they're going to be out for a few more weeks.
Oh, yeah. Beaulieu, I think the injury was January 2nd, and he said he was out at least a month. And Dahlstrom, obviously, we just was disclosed that he's out at least 6 weeks with a broken bone in his hand. So, I mean, again, it's been a tough season for defenseman.
So tweet us at Illegal Curve. Text us at 129090. Let us know if you think that Chevy and the Jets should be in the market for a top four defenseman or a depth defenseman. And obviously, we're going to be, you know, reading some of your tweets until we're off air at noon. And coming up in about 7 minutes time, Haley Salvian of the Athletic Ottawa is going to join us. We're going to talk about the 3-on-3 women's game at the All-Star game. She wrote about that. And obviously, we're going to talk about the Ottawa Senators, who the Jets meet later in February. I believe that's an afternoon game, if I'm not mistaken, here in Winnipeg. I know it is an afternoon game. I believe that's a Saturday or a Sunday, because I think we're going to be on early that day, Dave, either at 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning.
I can tell you right now, I won't be.
You'll be here too, Dave. I want to get back to the head coaches. And, you know, we know that the most recent head coach to be fired was Peter Laviolette.
Mm-hmm.
And John Hines replaced him. And, you know, they didn't win their first game, but then they beat the Jets. And, you know, they're not exactly on a winning streak right now. So the Nashville Predators still in a playoff race. But John Hines maybe hasn't had that same impact that a guy like Sheldon Keefe has had on the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the question I want to pose to you, Dave, is which coach you think is on the hot seat right now and could be fired. I don't know if we expect any coaches to be fired from now until the end of the season. So this question doesn't necessarily mean who you think might be fired, you know, in the next month or two, but who you could see being fired at the end of the season. And these are the coaches. And, you know, I did get these names from Jared Clinton of the Hockey News, great writer here in Winnipeg, a frequent guest of the Big Show. He had Bruce Boudreau, Jeff Blashill, Jeremy Colleton, John Cooper, Paul Maurice, Claude Julien, and then I threw in Jared Bednar of the Colorado Avalanche, because, you know, you look at the Avalanche right now, second place in the Central, or third place. They're neck and neck with the Dallas Stars there. Obviously, St. Louis has pulled away from the rest of the pack.
Points, yeah.
They're tied with Dallas, right? So Jared Bednar is an interesting one to me, because you look at the moves that Joey Sakic made in the offseason, Dave, and, you know, acquiring Nazem Kadri, Andre Burakovsky, Pierre-Edward Belmar, right? Like, they made some moves. Valerie Nichushkin, right? Like, Joe Sakic made some significant moves, and you look at the Avalanche, and they have been sputtering a little bit, and Philip Grubauer is starting to play a little bit better in net, and they've gone through injuries and all that, but when you've got Nate McKinnon and Mikko Rantanen and Gabriel Landeskog, Cale Makar, all these talented players, ultra-talented players, you almost think that the Avalanche should be doing better. So that's the reason why I put Jared Bednar on there. I think he's a great coach, but I do believe that Joe Sakic is expecting this team to go on a nice long playoff run. Like, if the Colorado Avalanche are knocked out in the first round, I think that's going to be a colossal disappointment for them. So that's why I threw Bednar on there. But I think when you talk about Bruce Boudreau, you talk about Jeff Blashill, Claude Julien, I think is safe in Montreal, but I understand why his name's on there. But for you, is Bruce Boudreau maybe the guy that stands out to you as the guy that might be on the hottest of the hot seats?
No, it doesn't. And the other thing is also, I think Gerard Gallant actually is the most recent one, right? Because, I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that's right. I forgot about Gerard Gallant.
That's what I mean. Like, it's funny because you said Laviolette, and I was like, yeah. And then I realized, wait a second, Gerard Gallant was like just like a couple days ago. So.
Well, we mentioned seven coaches have been fired this year.
Yeah.
You go back to the 2017-18 season, the
when
Jets.
There were none.
There were no coaches fired that year. That was the year, of course, the Jets went to the West Final against the Vegas Golden Knights. Gerard Gallant, he won Coach of the Year that year, right?
I believe so, yeah.
If he didn't, he should have. But you go back, the record is 11. So we're not that far away from the record. I forget what year that was, but I know the record is 11 coaches being fired. We're up to seven. So
but
which coach do you think is under the most danger to be fired? Is it Jeff Blashill or someone else? Because you said it's not Boudreaux.
No, and it's interesting because since 2015-16, I think, there's been new coaches in every team with the exception of three. Tampa Bay, John Cooper, Winnipeg Jets, Paul Maurice, and Jeff Blashill in Detroit.
A lot of people think Gerard Gallant makes a lot of sense because of the friendship, the connection with Stevie Y.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like his history with, you know, the organization. And so you're sitting there going, okay, well, wait a second. Is Gerard Gallant like a fit? Because again, sometimes you don't think you're going to make a move, but Gallant played what? 10 seasons in Detroit as a player? I mean, you got a guy who's...
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a history in the organization. He's a good coach. I mean, the fact that he was let go is unbelievable considering, you know, really it looks like the thing that killed him was the goaltending in Vegas. So we know he's a good coach. We know what he can do with a roster that was kind of put together and able to just kind of do it. In Detroit, you've got a, now I like Blashill, but he hasn't been given a lot, right? The cupboard's been bare. We know what's going on in Detroit. A lot of injuries. So to me, I still think, especially when a coach like Gerard Gallant becomes available, the connection with Detroit makes a lot of sense. So, you know, Yzerman probably doesn't want to let go of Blashill, but I would think Blashill, because Boudreaux, I think, has done a fairly remarkable job considering nobody expected Minnesota to be in the mix.
I think it's going to be very interesting. I like Jeff Blashill as well, and I don't think anybody expected the Red Wings to be a playoff team this year. And he obviously did an amazing job as a coach of the Grand Rapids Griffins. Bruce Boudreaux, even though he's done a really good job with the Wild and he's kept them competitive, he's not Bill Guerin's guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Boudreaux, he hasn't taken the team to the next level. And I think the Minnesota Wild might be talking about that word rebuild, even though you've got a lot of good veteran players, Parise and Suter and Zuccarello, Stahl. But I do think that Bruce Boudreaux is a guy that I look at that could lose his job over the summer. We don't know. Jeff Blashill, I'm not so sure. Maybe they give him another year or two. And then when it comes to Claude Julien, Jared Bednar, I don't think his job is in jeopardy because I do think he's a really good coach as well. But the only thing I would say, we mentioned it earlier, if the Avalanche are one and done and they don't go on a deep playoff run, then maybe they look at making a move behind the bench. But I think one thing is for sure, Dave, we don't expect that many coaches to be fired from now until the end of the season in April, because we've already seen seven, whereas 2 years ago we had none. Okay, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Haley Salvian of The Athletic Ottawa. We're going to talk about the 3-on-3 elite women's game that's coming up at the 2020 All-Star Game in St. Louis, and we're going to talk about those Ottawa Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Third and final hour here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on a Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, Drew Mandel, as we mentioned earlier, away from the program. But don't you fret, he will be back next week. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined from The Athletic Ottawa, Haley Salvian. Haley, thanks so much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Haley, so you've been covering this, and we wanted to talk to you about the Ottawa Senators as well, but you've been talking and writing about the 3-on-3 women's game, All-Star game, that's going to be taking place at the 2020 All-Star Game in St. Louis, and now the details have come out, and you reported on this for The Athletic. What were your thoughts when it was finally released, what the format was going to be? Because we didn't know if it was going to be the Canada versus the U.S., but can you just talk a little bit about what the format's going to be and what this is going to do for women's hockey, which obviously, you know, right now is in a pretty precarious situation?
Yeah, for sure. So the format that came out, and I think there was speculation for a little while. I think the speculation was always, you know, I think there's going to be a 3-on-3, but we just weren't sure what that kind of grouping would be. So would they mix the Canadians and the U.S. players and have them play against each other? Or would you do, you know, really tap into that Canada-USA rivalry? So it's been announced, I believe they announced it on Wednesday, that it is going to be 3-on-3. It's going to be the Canadian All-Stars versus the American All-Stars. Like I said, really tapping into that long-standing rivalry between the two countries. Each roster is going to have 10 players, one goalie, 9 skaters. I think it's about, one goalie, 2 defensemen. And then the rest are going to be kind of the elite forwards. The players were, this part's actually kind of interesting. The players were selected, you know, by the NHL, but also kind of just they did a ballot with, you know, some hockey legends like Cassie Campbell-Pascal, Haley Wickenheiser, Angela Ruggiero, and Cami Granato. So I thought that was a pretty cool little nugget in there that the NHL announced that, you know, it was these legends in the women's game that really chose these players. And, you know, you mentioned the kind of precarious environment in women's hockey right now, and I think this is going to be good. I think it's going to be good exposure. These are, you know, what these legends deem to be the best players in the game. They said that it had nothing to do with picking sides or drawing a line in the sand. You know, most of these players, 19 of these 20 players, are part of the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association that is boycotting the NWHL. There are no NWHL players, but I spoke with Cassie Campbell, who was a major part of organizing this, and she said it was just a matter of picking the best players. So I think it's going to be a really good product on the ice, and it's a really, really big stage. It's going to be integrated right into the skills day, so it's not like it's going to be the day before or early in the morning. You know, it's going to be right in the thick of, you know, all the different skills events. So you're going to have a lot of eyeballs on the women's game, and you have the best players possible taking part in it. So I think that can only be good for the women's game.
And, you know, Haley, that is a good point because, of course, exposure is so important, especially to a lot of people who aren't aware. But, you know, talking about that idea of where the women's game is right now, what is the current status of the situation? Because, I mean, a lot of people don't really know about the battle. A lot of people aren't aware of the status that some players aren't playing right now. So what is the current status of that? Can you bring our listeners up to date?
Yeah, for sure. So it all kind of goes back to when the Canadian Women's Hockey League folded last March, I believe that announcement came out. And then in May, around 200 players from the NWHL, from the CWHL, from Hockey Canada, USA Hockey, all announced that they would be boycotting the or any professional leagues in North America, a.k.a. the NWHL in the U.S., until they can get a league that is more viable and sustainable for the future. So essentially these players they formed this PWHPA, which is an association that they formed. They all pay, I think it's $25 dues, and they've been going on a traveling exhibition game tour in different cities around North America to try to play games and stay sharp. But they're sitting out the year because they don't believe that there's anything, you know, truly, and that's the kind of key word. They don't believe there's anything that's truly professional for them to play in. The NWHL and the former CWHL were quote unquote professional leagues, but in these players' opinions, they're not to the level that it should be. You know, in the CWHL, they were making around $2,000 a year. That's a player like Marie-Philippe Poulin, the best player in the world, making $2,000 to play hockey, which is, it's just crazy. So, these players are trying to fight for a better future. But then on the other side of things, the National Women's Hockey League in the U.S., they believe that they are viable and sustainable for the future. So you have two different sides who want the same thing. They want a bright future for the game, but they have completely different ideas of how to get that and what that, you know, eventually is. So it's been thought that the boycotting players want an NHL-backed league. They believe that that is truly the only way to make it successful for long, long in the future, not 5 years from now, but, you know, 20, 30 years from now. They want to really emulate that NBA-WNBA partnership, whereas the NWHL believes, like, no, we are sustainable for the future. We are the future of the women's game.
Well, you know,
so they both want a bright future, but they have completely different ways of trying to get there.
You know, and Haley, that's an interesting point. 4 days ago, You tweeted about what the WNBA is doing for their players and how the players will be exceeding six figures, averaging nearly $130,000, resulting in an increase from all players from rookies to veterans. Rookies used to make around $40,000. And we know that obviously the NBA has a massive TV deal in the States, but how does the NHL get involved? So that, like you said, I mean, $2,000 is ridiculous. So how is it that you can, but of course it's also a business, right? It has to produce, it has to make money. So how do you get to that point? Because obviously you can't compare to the WNBA because, you know, again, the TV deal that the NBA has is far surpasses anything the NHL has. So, but how do you get that for the women's game then?
Yeah, and I think it needs to start small, for one. I mean, the WNBA started really small. I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but they didn't have that many teams. Right now, they're well in the double digits of teams. When the WNBA started, it was quite small. And then it kept on growing and growing from there. And now 23 years in, you're seeing this really huge investment in the players with that new tentative CBA that was announced. Like, that is such massive news. And they've even said, you know, we're doing this not just for basketball, but we're trying to set the standard for women's hockey players and women's soccer players, that this is what, you know, female athletes deserve. They deserve that kind of investment. And so I think for the NHL, you know, if they're going to get involved, it needs to be small at first. They obviously need to have everybody on board. They have to get all the board of governors, you know, to approve the league owners and such. And essentially what they need to sell to them is this is going to be an investment and it's good for the women's game. Because, you know, there's definitely organizations who don't pull in a lot of money for the NHL, but they keep them in those markets to grow the game in that market, right? You know, the Arizona Coyotes is an example that I've talked about before is, you know, the Coyotes don't make a lot of money for the NHL, but the NHL keeps them there to grow hockey in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So why can't you do the same for women's hockey? Women's hockey is not going to make a lot of money at first. It's, you know, it's just probably won't. But you invest in it to grow that part of the game. So, you know, it's going to have to start small, 4 to 6 teams probably of elite players in really already established women's hockey markets. I think that's the really important part. You can't just put a team in, you know, a random city where you don't know it's going to work. You'd probably have to do that research and, you know, for sure have a team in Toronto because they already have that established fan base from the series and the CWHL. And then you just work from there. And like I said, you just have to make that investment and just, you know, believe that it's going to work out, even though you're not going to be making money for the first few years.
We're joined by Haley Salvian of The Athletic Ottawa on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And, you know, that tour that you were talking about earlier, Haley, that's called, of course, the Dream Gap Tour, the PWHPA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we should mention, you know, coming up in less than a week, there are going to be members, players of the PWHPA playing at the ECHL All-Star Classic. Yep. I know that the Dream Gap Tour was recently in Toronto. I believe that was last week. And then coming up at the end of February and March, they're going to be in Philadelphia. So was just going to throw in that you can find out more about the PWHPA at their website, pwhpa.com. And obviously, we love having you on talking about this because, you know, we want to see the women's game thrive and we want to see a professional hockey league formed, hopefully with the support of the NHL, Haley. And, you know, we want to transition, though. You cover the Ottawa Senators, obviously, and we want to talk about them. The Jets and Senators are going to meet coming up later in February, but that return, Mark Stone returning to Ottawa, obviously a good Winnipeg boy, picks up a goal and an assist. Were you surprised at the reception that he got, or were you not surprised considering just how popular, you know, he was when he was with Ottawa?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because this is my first year being in Ottawa. You know, I was in Toronto for the previous few years with the Athletics. So this is my first season on the Senators beat. But just in the lead up to Mark Stone returning and even just all season, you know, a lot of things always just seem to go back to Mark Stone. You know, things like Colin White struggling. Oh, but it was Mark Stone that helped him play so well. And you hear so much about how great of a leader he was. You see his jerseys in the stands still. I think I've seen fans actually go to Vegas specifically just to watch Mark Stone, you know, from Ottawa. So I don't think I was surprised. I mean, maybe just a little because I'd never really seen Mark Stone in person, you know, in Ottawa before. But just from everything that I'd heard, you know, this season and in the lead up to him coming, just the legacy that he had here in Ottawa, you know, everyone had just told me how important he was. And then to see the reception, and then to just see how classy he was, he went and did a skate around, waved to everybody. He got a standing ovation. I don't think I was surprised, but I was really, really impressed to just see, you know, the reception and, you know, just kind of see everything that people had told me, you know, emulated in that moment. I think it was pretty special.
You know, one player who's having a special season is Anthony Duclair. I mean, he's just been lights out for the Senators. He's an RFA next season. What is there any talk about a contract with him, or is he just kind of going to play it out and then just deal with it in the summer?
Yeah, I think with Anthony Duclair, I think they're, you know, there's no rush. I think they're trying to be really patient with that, and I think this year with all their RFAs and UFAs, they're really keeping everything under wraps. Last season, there was a pretty big what Pierre Dorion, the GM here, calls it a media circus. And he really wants to try to avoid that again. Last year, there was just so much about the Duchesne, even earlier in the year, Carlson, Dzingel, excuse me. So, you know, he's trying to keep things quiet. He doesn't want things to get as, you know, messy in public and so speculative like last year. So there really hasn't been that much, that many rumors or that many whispers around, to be honest here. So, but I do think with Duclair, because he is an RFA, that he has, you know, the team has control in the summer. I think they're just going to wait and see how things play out. And then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up going to arbitration. You know, I feel like Duclair is having a career year, so he's going to probably have the leverage to, you know, ask for a little bit more, a little bit more term, more money, whereas the Senators probably want to make sure that, you know, this Anthony Duclair that we're seeing right now, this really special season, is the Duclair that you're going to get in, you know, 3-4 years, however many years he stays down the road. So I can probably predict it being a 1 or 2 year deal for Duclair, just to, you know, make sure that it's not just a one-off. You know, he can score 20, 30, 40 goals, however much he ends up with, you know, more than just once. You know, you want to just make sure that this isn't a one-off. You don't want to lock him into a huge deal and, you know, he ends up declining a lot. So I think they'll just be patient for it this year, and I think it'll probably be a 1 or 2 year deal for Duclair.
Haley Salvian of the Athletic Ottawa joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Haley, just last question for you here. Coming up in about 4 hours' time, 3 o'clock Central Time, the Senators are going to be hosting the Calgary Flames, which means, of course, Brady Tkachuk going up against his brother, Matthew Tkachuk. There's been a lot of talk there in Ottawa about the whole Matthew Tkachuk, Zach Cassian situation. I imagine Brady Tkachuk is having a little chuckle about it with the media.
Yeah, I mean, Brady was asked about it yesterday, and you know, credit to Brady. I think their family has had, you know, people will say, you know, no publicity is bad publicity, but, you know, the Tkachuk family, just in the relationship that I've, you know, just made this season, you know, seeing Brady, and I've chatted with his mom, and I've seen Keith at the rink, you know, I get the sense that they don't want that kind of spotlight on the family. You know, they probably are getting a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of pumping the tires for Matthew, but a lot of really negative things about Matthew too. So when Brady was asked about it, he was like, you know, I have my personal opinions on the matter, and those are going to stay personal to me. And he said, you know, no matter what, that's my brother, and I'm always going to have his back. And that's really all that he said about it. You know, I don't think the family really wants another headline coming out of Brady Tkachuk saying X about Zach Cassian or, and stuff like that. So I think they're, you know, they're holding their personal opinions to their chest, and I can respect that, because I don't think they want this to continue blowing up. I mean, you had George Parros even go into Toronto when the Flames were there to try to talk to the parties to calm the waters, because it is blowing up a little bit what happened with Matthew and Zach Cassian. So I think the Tkachuk family also doesn't want to, you know, add more fuel to that fire.
You know, just a final thought on the Tkachuk family. Obviously, Keith Tkachuk, we're old enough to remember Jets 1.0, scored 50 goals in the last Jets season. But me personally, my favorite Tkachuk is Grandpa Don.
Grandpa Don?
Yeah, the Tkachuk grandfather. I'm not sure if you saw that on the father's trip, but Keith wasn't able to participate. So Grandpa Don Tkachuk was on the trip. So I thought that was pretty cute. So obviously a great hockey family with the Tkachuks. Haley, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate you joining us, and enjoy the game this afternoon between the Flames and the Senators.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks again, Haley. We're going to head to break. When we come back, what are we talking about, Dave? We're talking about the Jets and Hawks?
I've been talking about the Jets.
We'll talk about something. We'll head to break now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The guy's just in a vulnerable position. If it's anyone else, if it's not Cass, and the guy's going down, he's hurt, and I think you can ask any guy in hockey. No one wants to see that hit, and that hit's been gone out of the game for a long time. You've seen guys like Rafi Torres or Steve Downey, those guys are getting 15-game suspensions and being done in the league for hits like that. So he targets him. He targets his head. He chases him into a battle that he's not in and takes him out.
That's the real deal. Not Evander Holyfield. I'm talking about James Neal of the Edmonton Oilers earlier this week, talking about Matthew Tkachuk and Zach Cassian. Obviously, Neal thought there might have been a suspension for Tkachuk, but it was only Zach Cassian that got suspended.
The old ragdoll.
For going after Tkachuk, the old ragdoll. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Big thanks to Haley Salvian of the Athletic Ottawa. Awesome interview, talking about, you know, the 3-on-3 women's elite game that's coming up on January 24th at the All-Star game. Just awesome. Really looking forward to seeing the Canadian All-Stars and the American All-Stars. This segment, we're going to, as we talked about coming out of the break, we're talking about the Zach Cassian Matthew Tkachuk feud.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just love this stuff. And, you know, I don't think Zach Cassian was right in what he did, because Matthew Tkachuk, I think, was in a vulnerable position and obviously wasn't interested in fighting Cassian, even though Tkachuk is a big boy. I mean, he's a chip off the old block of his dad, Keith. Same thing with Brady. I mean, Brady and Matthew are big boys.
Mm-hmm.
They can handle themselves, but I didn't like how Zach Cassian went after him. I have no problem if it's a one-on-one fight and both players are wanting to fight, but there's a lot to talk about here, Dave, but I want to start off by talking about what happened on the ice, and it was a week ago. So it feels like it was, you know, a couple days ago, but mm-hmm. It was a week ago, you know, between Calgary and Edmonton. The Battle of Alberta is back, by the way, and it is awesome.
Well, it helps that they're fighting for a playoff spot against each other.
Right, and the next game between the Oilers and the Flames is coming up. I believe it's January 29th. Yes, it's Wednesday, January 29th. In Edmonton, and then Saturday, February 1st in Calgary. And then they play again the last game of the season. So the Flames and Oilers have three more games.
Right, but that 29th game is Zach Kassian's first game back after his suspension,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's, there's so much to talk about here with Kassian and Tkachuk. But first of all, do you have a problem with Matthew Tkachuk's hits on Cassian? Because I do think one of them, there was a strong argument you could make that it was charging.
Yeah, I thought one of them, he came from a long ways away to go after Cassian. I mean, and that was a significant, I thought, like, you know,
should Tkachuk have been suspended for that?
I mean, he caught him in a vulnerable spot.
Leaves
right?
his feet a little bit.
Yeah.
Like again, Tkachuk is a player, you know, Dave, I love that type of
grinder
physical hockey. And I think there was a really interesting article that came out. Rob Tuchowski, a Post Media, wrote about it and, you know, kind of talking about, you know, today's fast-paced NHL, mm-hmm. you know, the speed and skill has never been better. But, you know, when you talk about players like Matthew Tkachuk and, you know, Zach Cassian, Milan Lucic, you know, Brad Marchand, I mean, there's a lot of players. Ryan Reeves, I mean, there's still a lot of guys that love the physical type of game. And talking about, like, have our opinions changed? You know, you go back to the playoffs, St. Louis, like a guy like Patrick Maroon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Maroon had a big impact on the Blues winning the Stanley Cup, and he's a physical player, right? So, you know, you talk about, you know, that physical brand of hockey, but, you know, going back to this, do you think that there's anything to the Cassian comments about Matthew Tkachuk saying that, you know, he's going to have to answer the bell? And then, you know, there have been rumblings this week, both in Calgary and Edmonton, that, you know, when these two teams play again, January 29th, that maybe Zach Cassian's going to have to fight Milan Lucic. Like, do you think this is all ridiculous, or do you think this is just good for the Battle of Alberta, and it's just going to, you know, increase the amount of people that are interested in this game, and it's just overall good for hockey?
I mean, we haven't even talked about the billboard.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean,
I love that.
Maybe tell everybody
if you haven't seen that. I don't know the name of the radio station in Calgary, but there was a radio, I believe it was a Bell Media radio station, if I'm not mistaken. So what they did was they took out a billboard and wrote Matthew Tkachuk Friendship Tour, trying to calm the waters a little bit. So I believe they raised some money on GoFundMe or something like that. So it was just funny. I mean, people are having fun with it. Fans, media, players. I mean, I think everybody likes this. And what I liked about what Zach Cassian said, obviously, you know, we don't like the language he used. I think he went a little bit far with the language that he used. You know, if you haven't heard it, I mean, you can find it on YouTube or whatever, but, you know, that word I don't think should be used with the media. But afterwards, he didn't back down, and he said, I would do it again. So, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, we know that he's had his battles with Drew Doughty of the LA Kings,
right.
But, you know, this Cassian Tkachuk battle, I think, is going to be one to watch from now until the rest of the season. We talked about it, the Flames and the Oilers, they play three more times coming up from now until the end of the season, including the last game of the season. But I just hope that there aren't any cheap shots. I just hope that nobody does anything stupid, because Zach Cassian, say whatever you want about him, he's got 13 goals this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's playing on the top line.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a goon.
No, and I think that the important thing is, like, if Matthew Perreault got a warning about, you know, what he said, which again, you can understand his frustration, but at the same time, yeah, you still have to say, like, you can't be talking about swinging your stick and hitting a guy in the, you know, with your stick away. Matthew Perreault was talking about it. But similarly, like, you got to think that the NHL has basically said, guys, there is a zero tolerance for both of you that first game back. And if anything, we're throwing the book at you because you've been warned in advance. If it's a hockey play, then that's fine. But if you're doing stuff that we've already warned you about, they're going to throw the book at them. Because
do you have any problem, you know, if Matthew Tkachuk and Zach Cassian drop the gloves? Because there are a lot of people that think that, you know, the stage fighting should be out of the game. But do you think maybe Matthew Tkachuk should drop the gloves with Zach Cassian, get it out of the way in that first period of that game?
I don't know. I mean, like, that's a pretty big disparity, I think, in terms of...
Well, and Tkachuk can fight. He's fought before.
Sure, but I mean...
He's got 7 or 8 career fights.
Yeah, I just don't know that he's in the same weight class as a guy like Cassian.
No.
So to me, I don't know. I mean, like, do you have to answer the bell? I guess if you live by the sword, you die by the sword to a certain degree, right? Like, if you're going to play that game on the edge, well, then you have to expect that there's going to be consequences. And if you're running around there like an idiot and you're pissing off everybody on the opposing team, well, again, Cassian ragdolled you a little bit, but, you know, whether it's a fight or whether it's just you're going to be targeted. But again, that could be Matthew Tkachuk's favor, right? Because if the Edmonton Oilers are so focused on getting even with Matthew Tkachuk, they're not focused on the game, and that could be to Calgary's advantage. So, you know, Matthew Tkachuk right now is living a little bit rent-free in the Oilers' heads, and you can't really have that. So I think you just got to focus on the game, and if the opportunity presents itself to Zach Cassian to hit him in a clean manner, go for it.
And whether they fight or whether Lucic fights Cassian, I don't really care. I mean, Zach Rinaldo is another guy. Like, Zach Rinaldo and Zach Cassian fighting, to me, is useless.
Yeah,
like, that's a staged fight, right? So regardless if we see any fights in that game on January 29th, I just love this type of hockey. Like, I love rivalries like this. Battle of Alberta. These two teams, as you mentioned, Dave, these two teams are battling for a playoff spot. Like, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Vegas. I mean, the Pacific Division is so tight. So I just think this is great for hockey to have these rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Zach Cassian doesn't get enough credit for how good of a player he really is. I think a lot of people were just calling him a goon. But, you know, whether or not you like fighting and whether or not you think it's part of the game, earlier this season, we saw Nick Ehlers fight Ryan Getzlaff.
Well, who wasn't
right?
He?
So it really is still part of the game. Is it as big of a part of the game as it was in the 1980s and 1990s, early 2000s? Absolutely not. But it is still part of the game. You still see fighting in the NHL. And again, this isn't just about fighting. But Zach Cassian did believe that Matthew Tkachuk should have dropped the gloves with him, even though Cassian jumped him, and that's one of the reasons why he got suspended for 2 games. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our boy, Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster Daniel Fink. David Minuk is doing color for this afternoon's game between the Moose and the Laval Rocket, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290, starting at 1:45 with the pregame show. We're going to head to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Daniel Fink.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with David Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and we've got Shawnee Asor producing. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. Tonight at Rumors, it's David Huntsberger's final night. And coming up from March 19th to the 21st, it's the Rachel Feinstein concert series. If you haven't seen Rachel's stand-up before, she's hilarious. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're now joined by Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster Daniel Fink. The Moose have 2 important games this weekend coming up against the Laval Rocket. Both games this weekend coming up at 2 o'clock p.m. 1:45 p.m. is the Manitoba Moose pregame show here on TSN Radio 1290. Daniel, Happy New Year. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, but now you've got me thinking about Rumors Nachos, and that's pretty much all I can think about right now.
they've got good food. They've got funny comedians, and they've also got good food, good drinks. They've got it all there. And Daniel, obviously breaking news just coming out. Maybe Pascal Vincent wouldn't like this too much because he would like to have Nelson Nogé in the lineup this afternoon, but the Winnipeg Jets have recalled Nelson Nogé. Maybe that's because Lucas Ibiza is injured. We're not sure. We'll have more, as things progress here, but a little bit of breaking news. So the Moose looks like won't have Nogé in the lineup today.
Yeah, it's always nice when these things come out about 2 or 3 minutes before I get on with you guys rather than right in the middle of. So it's, Yeah, I mean, for Nelson Noje and Cameron Schilling called up just before him, obviously a couple of dependable guys that the Jets can rely on should they get into any action. I mean, we've seen both of them suit up and acquit themselves reasonably well in depth roles for the hockey clubs. So a nice feather in the cap for those guys. Schilling is in the midst of, well, on pace for a career season. I guess kind of depends how much time he spends with the Jets here over the next little bit. But rolling right along, up to 19 points on the year, scored his fifth goal of the season, which is just two off his career high already. So, and for Noje, just dependable as always after that tough season where he missed most of the year, just continues to progress as a prospect and as a solid professional player. So two guys, like I said, very dependable and great opportunity for them to get with the big club.
You know, Daniel, as we saw last year with this team, they were in a terrible position come Christmas time and they put on a remarkable push that fell just short. This year, not the same. Obviously, the start of the season wasn't great, but they weren't in the exact same position. 19-23 right now. They're still within striking range of the playoffs, so that's not out of reach. But how cognizant is this team, knowing what happened to them last year? You know, you've got guys like veteran guys like Ryan White, and he was spitting fire after one of the games against Belleville this week, just because he is aware of how hard it takes to get to the playoffs. But just how aware is this team right now that, you know, you cannot take nights off because you're not in a situation where you can afford to lose points?
Yeah, in talking to some of the guys, I think they're very aware. And was talking to Jimmy Olney earlier in the week about maybe some of the differences, despite it being a very similar team in a lot of ways to the group that went on that run last year. He mentioned that just a few different elements kind of shakes things up, and maybe you don't quite have that same drive. Maybe you don't have quite that same mission that they just seemed to be on last year. And they're just trying to capture that feeling again. So they came up with a big win against Belleville. I mean, that Monday game, guys, was a really tough one for the hockey team. I think that was maybe overlooked just a little bit by even the players themselves. I mean, they got off the plane at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning, had the day to kind of try and get themselves back together, and then we're back on the ice against one of the best teams in the American Hockey League right now. They're sitting at the top of the North Division when the Moose beat them the other night in the Belleville Senators. That's a fast team that the Moose just had trouble keeping up with on Monday. Wednesday night, they went out there. They took care of their own end. They took care of business for the most part. I mean, when you think about it, just gave up one goal in normal circumstances. Usually you don't have a puck poked away from your goaltender and then tapped into the goal. So a pretty solid effort. And then, of course, huge to get the overtime victory because, as Pascal Vincent said yesterday, don't really care if those Eastern teams pick up any points in games. You're just looking to pick them up any way you can because it doesn't affect your standing at all. So the Moose will continue to scratch and claw here against another good team in the Laval Rocket, who are also looking to keep pace with their playoff hopes because they're in a very, very good North Division. And like you were saying, for taking nights off, they can't afford to lose any points as well.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline on TSN 1290 by Daniel Fink, manager hockey communications and broadcaster for the Manitoba Moose. And, you know, you talked about the games against Belleville, and we have to go back to that big overtime win. Michael Spacek scores the OT winner. Is a nice goal. And as you mentioned, Monday was a disappointing loss to Belleville. Eric Comrie was obviously very good in that game, even in a loss. And Spacek, I think you would agree, has had a tough year. I believe he's missed 14 games. And, you know, just sticking with Spacek, I mean, is he not going to be one of those players that this Moose Club relies on? Because he is a little bit of a forgotten guy when you think about that 2015 draft. You know, we always talk about all the guys from that 2015 draft, like Connor, Roslovic, you know, Harkins, Niku, but Spacek has been a big part of this Moose Club, even though he's missed some games, and Veselainen and other players like Chibisov maybe get more of the headlines. But when you talk about Spacek, how big of a stretch is this for him, not only to prove himself because he's missed a lot of games, but the Moose need his offense?
Yeah, I mean, the guy has had his challenges this season, obviously not where he'd want to be production-wise. I mean, those games he missed, he was up with the Winnipeg Jets for pretty much a month and didn't play over that span. So, I mean, when you think about guys being out of lineup, it's almost like you're injured. You're not at game speed when you get back. So it seems to have taken him a little bit to kind of get back in the groove, and then the break came up and things like that. So for Spacek, when he got back from the break, seemed to be getting the offense rolling a little bit, and then nobody was scoring for the Moose for a week and a half there. And now he's got a couple of points and would be a guy to watch for the Moose because as history has shown us with Michael Spacek,
tends to score in bunches, tends to get little big or little to big runs going. And like you said, the Moose could really use that production. They're pretty deep at center at this point, especially with David Gustafson on the horizon. So he's a weapon on the power play, his spot check. He's found maybe a little bit of a home with Andrei Chibasov and Christian Reichel. That line was great for the Moose. And, of course, Chibasov and Spacek were out there for the overtime winners. So Michael Spacek found a way to come through for the Moose, and the guys seemed pretty excited for him after the game about the goal, about the winner. Obviously a big 2 points for the team, but I think as well for Spacek to maybe get rolling a little bit and find some of that offensive spark that he has been relatively consistently for the Moose in his career.
Well, you know, Daniel, here in the Prairies, the horizon could be far, far away, or it could be near. So the question for a lot of Moose fans or a lot of Jets fans is, what's the status of 2018 second-round pick David Gustafson? He's obviously was assigned after the World Juniors to come back, play for Manitoba. We know he was dealing with an injury, and he had some time, family time as well. So what do you see for David Gustafson? We obviously know he's was fantastic at the World Juniors for Team Sweden. So what would you be your envisioning for him? Is he ready to go for Manitoba?
Well, we won't see him this weekend for the Moose. Sounds like he's going to get back on the ice at the very least next week. So that's not even full practices yet. It's IR skates, and then they'll continue to evaluate from there. So he is progressing. He will be on the ice, but we'll have to wait and see when his first game action is coming up.
Daniel Fink joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline on TSN 1290. And, you know, it's Peter Stoykowicz bobblehead night tomorrow afternoon against Laval. Obviously, Peter Stoykowicz is not in the lineup. Is there any further update on Stoykowicz? Obviously, you know, a hometown boy here from Winnipeg, but has only got into 12 games this year with the Moose.
Yeah, unfortunately, our terrible record for guys actually playing in their bobblehead nights will continue tomorrow. But it's great to see Peter honored with the bobblehead. He's meant so much to this team since it came back to Winnipeg, obviously, serving as captain, the second Winnipegger to serve as captain for the Moose in the team's history. So, unfortunately, limited to 12 games so far this season. We won't be seeing him for a little bit, it looks like. Still, along with Luke Green, kind of the status quo, just it's long-term, it's indefinite, and just continuing to work their way through what they're dealing with. And unfortunately for both those defensemen who the Moose could really use right now with a couple of guys called up, the waiting game continues.
You know, Daniel, a lot of people don't understand the impact Eric Comrie has if you don't watch this team on a daily basis. We obviously know he was the team MVP last season. And just how important was his clearing waivers and being assigned to the Manitoba Moose for this squad moving forward? And also for Mikael Burden and not having to have to shoulder the entire burden in his second year as a pro.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about guys' impact on organizations, when you have the whole office, essentially, and not just hockey operations, the business side, sitting on pins and needles, watching the countdown to 11 o'clock and then watching for whichever, usually Elliot Friedman seems to lead the way, getting those waiver tweets out to see if he cleared. That video that the Moose tweeted out with the soccer fan meme was pretty accurate for the office.
It was pretty fantastic.
He was going to be coming back. So means a lot to the team. Or entire organization, really. He's just been such a big part of everything on and off the ice. And when it comes to on the ice, Eric Comrie has been absolutely brilliant. You wouldn't expect that from a guy who had only played 7 games throughout the early, pretty much first half of the season. He comes in and he has been sensational for the Moose. I mean, he gave up 4 goals on Monday. Frankly, that game could have looked a lot worse. But some of the 10-bell saves that he came out and made were fantastic. Maybe not quite at that level, on at least to start on Wednesday. Maybe had a little bit of trouble settling in. But after he gave up that bit of a gaff goal, giving away the puck at the side of the net, he locked things down and nothing was getting past him, including some frantic action in overtime. So when you have a goaltender who can go out there and you have a chance to win every night because he's probably the best player on the ice, that says a lot about what a guy does for your team on the ice. And as you mentioned, it gives Mikael Burden a little bit of a push too, because he was pretty comfortable. He played pretty much every game. He knew that no matter what happened, he was probably going to be in the net the next night. So now he's got to earn his ice time just as Comrie does. And Comrie's been able to kind of take the ball and run with it over the little bit because he's been so hot, because he's been playing so well. And it gives Burden maybe a little bit of an opportunity to rest up as well for what will be a very busy stretch drive.
Daniel, as we talked about earlier, Nelson Nogé just recalled. If you're just joining us, Nelson Nogé has been recalled by the Winnipeg Jets. We talked about Cam Schilling is up with the Jets as well on this road trip. What does that mean in terms of picking up those minutes? You know, Charles David Beaudoin, he's played a couple of games now for the Moose. You expect him to have an increased role. Leon Gavanki, like, who is going to absorb those minutes? Because when you're talking about Schilling and Nelson Nogé, those guys play a lot of minutes on the back end for Pascal.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hayden Shaw and Charles David Beaudoin called up this week, so they'll both likely draw in here today. Beaudoin is a guy who the team is very familiar with and has logged a lot of minutes for Pascal Vincent. He's a guy that the team really likes. He's worn an A when those opportunities have been there for the club. So they see him as a leader, and with some of the young guys, like your Kovacevics, like your Gavankas, like your Luke Greens, who unfortunately hasn't played a whole ton this season. But with those guys joining the team, obviously the emphasis is on getting those young guys those minutes. So unfortunately, he had to spend some time in the ECHL with both Jacksonville and Rapid City more recently. So he's a guy that the team really likes and is happy to have back. Hayden Shaw got into a few games, more of a puck-moving defenseman. He's been a little hot right now with the Jacksonville Icemen prior to his recall. So guys who can move around, who can skate, not the biggest defenseman on the back end. So the Moose have certainly lost some size over the last week with Schilling and Nogé called up. But those are two guys that the Moose are going to rely on to step in. And then it's going to be on Logan Stanley, Jonathan Kovacevic, those guys to really step it up. And I think we saw Logan Stanley last year when the Moose found themselves facing a very similar situation. Schilling and Nogé called up earlier on in the season. He stepped up and played some of his best hockey of the season. So it's a great opportunity for him to really be a leader on the back end. Kovacevic and Gavanka have been so good as rookies. Really, you never know what to expect, especially from defensemen as rookies. And Gavanka and Kovacevic have really impressed, and they're going to get an opportunity to play some more minutes as well. So there's plenty of time out there for those young guys, and the elder statesman Jimmy Olney, I think, is going to be heavily relied on to provide some leadership along the way as well.
You know, Daniel, we have a tendency to look at points for players to see, measure them, that be use that as their measurement of success. Christian Vesalainen, Jets 2017 first-round pick. He has 3 goals and 4 assists in his last 10 games, but it's a lot of the other things that he's being called upon and that are developing in his game. So some things that people, if you don't watch the games, might not see, like his ability to play on the PK that Pascal's trusting him. What are some of the things away from the points, away from the production, that you're noticing in Christian Vesalainen's game right now with the Moose?
Speed's starting to pick up. I think that's one thing that we've really noticed over the last few games for Vesalainen, and how he's getting on the forecheck, how he's consistently trying to drive the play, how aggressive he's been. And I think that might have been something that just wasn't quite there and maybe in the first half of the season. And it's something that guys sometimes have to learn at this level, especially in this league. Because coming over from Europe, there's different ice size, things like that. It is a very different game, and it's not just the size of the ice and the speed of the game. There's a lot of things that come through in the North American style of game that some guys need to learn. I think Vesalainen has taken that and run with it. He's been receptive, it seems. He's been changing his game. We've been seeing his game evolve, seems, by every week. Something else has changed. Something else has tweaked. So the offense was starting to come, and then again, the Moose ran into a bit of a cold streak. Seems like they're still generating some of that chemistry as Logan Shaw returned to the lineup. That caused a lineup shuffle, so still trying to figure out some of those elements, but you got to like what you see away from the puck from Vesalainen, and as the coaches have said, that skill is there. That shot is there. The offense will come. It's about playing the game the right way first, and then you liken it to maybe like a Kyle Connor a few years ago with the Moose. I mean, he did not get off to a great start, guys, with the Moose. I would think it was 8 goals in his first 32 games at the AHL level. He needed to build his game, needed to figure out how he was going to play the game, how he was going to go into the corners, how he's going to win those battles that we see him winning so often with the Winnipeg Jets now. Well, Kyle Connor scored nearly a goal per game in his last 20 games in the AHL, leading up to becoming a full-time Winnipeg Jet. So it's a process, and while we sometimes get impatient with some of these young guys, to get through that process, Christian Vesalainen is doing the work that he needs to.
The Manitoba Moose host the Laval Rocket this afternoon, just over 2 hours from now, 2 o'clock live from Bell MTS Place. Daniel Fink will have the call. The pregame show starts at 1:45. My colleague David Minuk will be doing color with Daniel. We really appreciate you coming on this morning with us. We should also mention that this afternoon the Moose will be wearing their Follow Your Dreams jerseys, celebrating Indigenous culture. The jerseys look absolutely awesome. They're going to be rocking those. And then, as we mentioned earlier, tomorrow is Peter Stojkovic bobblehead day. And unfortunately, Peter won't be in the lineup, the Moose captain, but still your chance to get a bobblehead. So, Daniel, again, we appreciate you joining us, and we'll look forward to listening to you and Dave a couple of hours from now live for the Moose Rocket game.
Yeah, is there anything more Manitoban than braving the snow to get down to the rink for a couple of Moose?
Absolutely. Games? Yeah, what snow? It's only 15 centimeters. That's nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's got winter tires, right?
That's right. Take care, Daniel.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. We're going to head to break one more segment. It's going to have to be a short one. We went a little long, Dave, with Daniel, but that's okay. We love talking Moose. Mm-hmm. We'll be back for one last segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Final segment here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to Daniel Fink, Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster, for joining us. Our very own Dave Minuk will be doing color this afternoon when the Moose host the Laval Rocket. That's going to do it for us. We didn't even have time to get into the Nelson Nogier recall. I guess we touched on it a little bit.
Go to illegalcurve.com.
Go to illegalcurve.com. We'll have all of the details. We did touch on it a little bit, but it looks like Lucas Sabiza might be injured for the Jets, so stay tuned to the station. Moose and Rocket coming up, as we mentioned, at 2 o'clock. Big thanks to our guests. Murata Test joined us, Haley Salvian, Jimmy Greenfield, and then we also mentioned Daniel Fink just joined us. Big thanks to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Zappia Group Realty, and Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Jets and Blackhawks tomorrow, 6 o'clock p.m. Central, puck drop, hoping to get back in the win column. And coming up in less than 2 hours, the Moose and Rocket here on TSN Radio 1290. Thanks very much for listening.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.